You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
I've been contemplating like different dimensional doors that you could travel through that would stop time here. But so time would keep moving with your consciousness as you travel out of your body through another dimensional door, right? But here time has stopped. So it's almost like time is irrelevant. And, you know, but Dave and I are drummers, so we keep time anyway. So it doesn't matter. Time is irrelevant. We keep time.
So you're basically, your job is irrelevant.
We are time, though. So yeah, if it's time, guess what? Call Shannon and Dave because it's time, motherfuckers.
Guys, normally we have like multiple sign-ins. Like, hey, you're listening to 2020, subscribe. That doesn't happen on this episode. That's because Shannon Larkin's fucking eyes, you can tell in real time, just like the Titanic sinking in the movie, his eyes are getting exponentially blacker because his pupils are dilated. You can tell that the Cambodian shrooms are now interacting with the Costa Rican shrooms, and you can see David Abruzzese from Pearl Jam looking into the netherworld and seeing the astral projection, wherever the fuck he is, of Shannon as they're both realizing how beautiful that place, wherever that place may be, is.
Well, so in other words, the three of us got 2020'd out of ending our first episode and starting our second episode because we had two amazing guests this week. Obviously, as Benny mentioned, he didn't introduce us, but Benny Goodman, I'm Siobhan Cronin, again with Corey Peza. You're listening to 2020'd. We have part two with David Abruzzese and Shannon Larkin. Just some craziness in this episode. I don't even know how to describe it.
The apocalypse and the black hole that is David Abruzzese. Okay, hold on. So I have to ask an important question. So David, since we've spoken last, I noticed that Pearl Jam had a number one album with you on it again, with Pearl Jam MTV Unplugged, because I remember watching that. Was it 93 or 92 or what have you? And it being the coolest thing that was on MTV at the time. And it came out during the COVIDs and it went to number one. What's up with that, bro?
I don't know, but it's kind of cool, you know, that they finally put out another successful record with a good drummer.
Hey, you know what my favorite Pearl Jam record is?
No.
Your first one. Your first record with a Vitalogy.
Oh, Vitalogy is my second one with it.
Still that's Dave's second record. I mean, yeah, okay. I know. I didn't know.
You say hello, I say goodbye. Hello, hello.
All those records, though, are all great, but that's my favorite one. All of these years.
I think that one, I mean, for me as a drummer, that's my favorite one because it was the most...
It's raw.
Yeah.
It rocks like a classic rock or something. It's just rocks. It's just, you beat the fucking, you're like a fucking gorilla or something.
It's weird you have a bunch of number one records with them, but you're not in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. That's kind of strange to me.
Here we go.
I don't understand.
Let's start it.
Shannon, what the fuck do you think about this? Because this is kind of how we got David to come out of hiding. Like, what do you think about that? He just had another number one with a band he hasn't been in for over 20 fucking years, and they still won't even give him his due.
It's not right, but I mean, on the other hand, like you had to ask me that question.
But it's okay.
I wasn't on the first two Godsmack records, and you were like, "What if they fucking, you know, put Godsmack in a hall someday?" And I'm not the one they pick. And you know what? I don't give a fuck because those fucking dudes are fucking a bunch of suit and ties that a committee sits around and puts fucking Cher in before Kiss or whatever. You know, it's a bullshit thing anyway. You know, and if you look at like the Ramones or whatever, you know, and they don't put Richie Ramone, they're picking and choose what it should be up to the bands, I guess, maybe. I don't know. But Dave, I would have been like, it would have hurt me. I know, I'll be honest. It would have hurt me. It would hurt my feelings, like that the band wouldn't stick up and say, look, we can have both of y'all fucking knuckleheads in, whatever.
Sure. You know what I mean? Yeah.
I mean, yeah. You know what I mean? For the time and the records done and the time spent on the road and everything and just being a part of something that mm-hmm. culturally relevant would be, it would hurt my feelings, you know.
It did hurt. I also think Pearl Jam's case, I mean, I personally think that their crew should have been in the Hall of Fame, you know, because if it wasn't for the crew, that band wouldn't have been shit. That crew, that the core crew that we had from when we hopped in the van together. I mean, you know, every night when I went on stage, my ritual was, you know, slap Eric on the back, our tour manager, go over and give our monitor engineer a kiss on the cheek, high five Scully, call him a dick, go over and you know, flip George Webb off and then go back and hug Jimmy. And, you know, it was like, that was that, you know, if that didn't happen every night, then it didn't feel right, you know? Just one of those
things. Did that happen the night that you gave Eddie 17 stitches?
Well, you know, sometimes you want to hit a crash cymbal.
Well, maybe it was the hug that you didn't give your friend. Like, maybe it was the crew's fault because you didn't hug them and they were, like, getting blown with Vinnie Paul in the back room.
No, that was part of the thing with that crew. They worked as hard as we did, you know. No one, there were no shenanigans. There was nothing that, it was, you know, I mean, I remember when we were on Lollapalooza and hanging out with Ministry and realizing how lucky we were the night that Al shot off a pyro thing in the bus, down the bus hallway into the front windshield. Oh my God. I was so lucky to be in a tame band. Oh my God. That bus driver pulled, didn't say a word, got out, got his bags and started walking.
Oh, my God.
So frightening.
It's just a 25 degree burst. What's the big deal?
Yeah.
I saw y'all, Dave, in Lollapalooza, Pittsburgh. And, like, it was such a memorable moment because Pearl Jam was, I think, the second band on the stage.
Yeah, and 30 minutes, man.
But the Jeremy had fucking spoken by then. And God damn, you know, the motherfuckers were, and me and my, at the time, my fiance and my best buddy and his wife and one more couple. And we had driven from Baltimore up to Pittsburgh to see Lollapalooza. And so we get the great idea to take paper acid right before we walk in, you know? And so Pearl Jam was pretty new, you know, but Jeremy had spoken, everybody knew it. And so fucking, we had like, we were underneath the, it was one of those amphitheaters and we were underneath the top that we were, so we were covered and the lawn. And of course the whole thing was, it's probably sold out all for fucking Pearl Jam at that point. But no, you know, the promoters, no one knew this shit yet. So, or else they'd have moved y'all up to the fucking where you should have been by then. But anyway, so as soon as y'all fucking the first note, the whole lawn just said, fuck it. And jumped the security guards going down. We're tripping balls, dude. Me and my fiance and I'm like, oh my God, it was the scariest thing. We were scared to death by you guys. Like those Pearl Jam guys, they're scary.
Yeah, it was so cool though, because from where I was sitting, all those people, that mass of humanity that would always rush up or rip the seats out and hand them up to us, all they all had big smiles on their face. So it was cool. It didn't look as violent as it must have felt being in the crowd. And there was one, there was a show in Dallas where we were playing
on acid.
My folks were there and I remember seeing them. And I thought, uh-oh, as soon as we played, like, you know, really, I was worried for my parents. And luckily they had gotten plucked out and brought back to the soundboard. So, nice. So that was a show where they actually, the crowd had wrenched the seats out of the cement and handed them up row after row. So I think we had to pay for 17 row seats. Yeah. That was the best 30 minute a day job ever.
It must have really been something else though, to be a part of, you know, watching something touch just.
Oh culture. Yeah.
It like impact our whole culture, you know, and like watching it happen, like, in real time being part of this. You're
that
changing.
Was trip, though, you know, when it was happening, we were working so hard and I was working so hard that we didn't see it. You know, I mean, I look back when I see things now and I look back and I read articles and, or when people write me, you know, send, you know, out of the blue, I get these emails from people and it just blows my mind, you know, just, oh, it never fails to blow my mind. But at the time, you know, we were working so hard, you know, I mean, we were a 5 day on, 1 day off band for years. You know, we just worked, you know, we were, I mean, you know, when we were out with the Peppers, we were doing one-off shows too, because, you know, we were trying to make some money. Yeah, but then yeah. Selling, you know, t-shirts left and right. So bought my house t-shirts.
Yeah, man. Merch rules. Especially now.
Ask Ron from Starset. He does the same thing as Kevin from Candlebox, doesn't he? He owns a merch company. And of course, how smart is it to do the merch for like one of the most ubiquitous bands out there, such as Starset? Siobhan, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. It's funny because, you know, coming from classical music, I had no understanding of what merch even was. So this was like a phenomenon to me when I got into the rock
world.
No
Beethoven tour shirts for you?
Yeah.
No. Yeah, I mean, it's classical music. Everything's made on live performance and you're not even making money. It's all like buffered by sponsors. So it's so interesting, like how the business structure works in rock music is completely different.
Oh, yeah, man. T-shirts and hats.
Amazing. Yeah. Incredible.
Tchaikovsky.
Yeah, right. We need some Lost Symphony hats.
So, okay, I have to ask you guys, because Shannon took some you know, ethereal, esoteric tea earlier. I want to ask you guys, I know that we all, you know, unite in our view that going to the netherworld, as I call it, helps sort of defragment your emotions and can certainly help you get a better grip on things when you kind of come back to reality. How do you guys feel about that? You know, Shannon and David, especially going live to Shannon.
What exactly do you feel about
taking shrooms in your life? Do you feel like it actually helps you? Like, what does it do for you, for people who don't understand the value?
Right now I have real warm feeling in my stomach. And my room is like a light with beautiful, vibrant color.
And, can you turn the camera so we can see your room a little bit?
Okay.
On the spot.
I just love this room. It's amazing.
Oh, that's so vibey, though. Oh, my gosh.
It's like a Morris Escher tessellation. Like, which way are we walking on the Mobius strip, asshole?
This reminds me, there's this venue in Milwaukee. I think it's called The Rave. I don't know if you guys have played there. No, but the dressing, I have like a vivid memory of this place, and we've played there a few times, but like all the dressing rooms are super vibey like that. It's like this weird old place. There was like a secret underground pool that they like locked up, but like all the dressing rooms, it's like tapestries and lava lamps and like cool chairs. And it's like, it's completely unlike any other venue I've been to.
Bill Graham
in Milwaukee. Yeah, I think it's called The Rave, right?
That's what I modeled this room on.
Okay, I was like,
shut the fuck up.
I was like, this room reminds me exactly of the dressing room we had at The Rave, and I was like, it's so cool. I love that place.
I love that you just called out the exact room. I thought it looked like Ernie Bach's back smash room, but like, no.
That place has been there forever.
Yeah.
You know, it's got three rooms. There's a little shit bar in the bottom, and then the mid room, and then the big fucking 2000. So I played all three of the rooms in different incarnations, you know.
Oh, nice. I think we've played two of the three rooms, but that's the place that has, like, I think there's a secret, like, swimming pool, right? There's, like, an old...
And you can Yeah, and you can go up on the roof, and it's supposed to be that pool room is haunted or whatever. It's a cool
place.
Yeah,
exactly, yeah.
But every time I played there, I was like... I would look forward to when I'd see it on the itinerary. I'd look forward to playing there to be in the dressing room, get high.
Totally. So, yeah. It's like our whole sound crew.
I'm like, if I can ever afford my own house someday, I'm going to have a fucking hippie room that looks just like the, and that's what this room is. Except it's even better. I made it better than theirs.
Yeah.
Because I have bongs and stuff.
Yeah, they just have like a little fridge and some lava lamps, so I'm sure yours is way decked out. Yeah.
No, that's, you know, awesome. They have those huge lava lamps in their dressing rooms, and the big ones, you know, like I,
right.
But I swear I got my idea from them. That's
so funny.
I got the idea of my pants from watching your interview, your last interview.
That's fucking awesome. Fantastic, bro.
Once again, you got to tune into the YouTube. On
Who
this
needs drugs when you have friends like these, ladies and gentlemen?
Exactly.
Your pants are literally like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And it doesn't hurt the fact that you literally look like Hunter S. Thompson with your fucking cigarette. Like, we're 25 miles outside of Vegas. But you know what? If we want to get darker, we can go some Bukowski. You know, find what you love, David, and let it kill you.
That's a damn finger, you're intense. Guys.
The two of you guys, you're our favorite guests. You guys are awesome. You're, you know, both incredible drummers, like legendary careers, and you're both super down to earth, super cool. And I get like the same kind of vibe. Shannon, on your last episode, you kind of talked about, you know, the atmosphere you create, not only in your room, but your yard. You know, you've created this whole.
And we found out from Mikey Doling, his house is like black.
Yeah,
like, we didn't know that.
Yeah,
Mikey Doling told us. We had to find out from Mikey.
Hey, did you guys have fun with Mikey?
Oh, we love Mikey.
He's awesome. The fucking man. He's really cool.
So you kind of create this your environment for yourself that really fits your vibe. David, you're living in a I think an area that fits your vibe. Shannon, can you tell David about? Yeah, look at that. Can you tell him about like your yard, your river in your yard, the canal you've built. And then maybe David you can share like what's going on outside your place there.
Yes.
Oh shit.
How far are you from Mount Vesuvius?
Don't worry.
He's got volcanoes in the background, I'm just saying. Oh, I don't know where it is. He could be on a different planet.
I'm like, I remember I just saw a movie, I had that in it. God damn it. All right. Volcano. Vesuvius.
Yes.
Venus. Flytrap.
But how important is your environment, especially now that you're, because people don't understand that the environment, the music you listen to is so paramount to how you feel with what you're doing as far as emotionally and soul cleansing by taking the shroomy shrooms.
Yeah. I know that. Wow. His place is gorgeous. Look at that.
All right. Just keep going. You're going to love it. This is for you, Shannon.
You're taking all of us on a trip. You guys have to tune into YouTube and watch this because David, he's giving us a little bit more information about his undisclosed location, which we can't talk about it.
Oh my God.
Yeah, don't it. Oh, yes.
For those who are not visually watching, we have a duck floaty in a very, very koi interesting pond. Koi pond that's very green in nature.
Yeah. Gorgeous. That's I thought that would be particularly interesting to you right now, Shannon.
That was particularly gorgeous, man. Wow.
So lush, yeah.
Wow.
It's a little bit foggy today, but it's a nice day out.
It's gorgeous, man. Wow.
Oh.
Did you plant stuff yourself?
Oh yeah. Yeah. This place, man. This place was falling down when I before I fixed it. You could see the sky through the roof, and the floor was dirt. Yeah.
No. Really? Wow, dude.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. Wow. Yeah, it came out pretty good.
It's gorgeous, man. Wow.
I'm actually working in my yard now, as you can see.
That's amazing. I love it, man. Wow.
Plant my own plant.
MVP Cribs. With David Abergies.
Oh, so let me ask you both a question. Who, if you each had to identify three of the most influential, and it doesn't have to be drummers, because I know we've talked about a lot about drummers, and obviously I don't know a lot about drummers, but you know, who would you consider the most influential figures or artists or ideas, like anything that really like changed your perspective in on your craft or what you do or changed your life in some way? I'm just curious to hear.
Wow.
I mean, off the top of my head, David Bowie, Aleister Crowley, and Pete Townsend.
Okay. I mean, interesting.
Three artists that changed my fucking world, man, right there.
How about you, David? Checking the ball.
That's a damn fine question. Right now, the only thing that comes to mind is this guy.
I'm trying to see here. Hold on.
Everybody, man, you know, I always come back to the people that I've been lucky enough to create music with. You know, I mean, there are my influences and the people that shape me, you know, the soundtrack of my youth. And then there's the Daily Basis people. And, but like when I went and worked with Roger Hodgson from Supertramp, and I mean, the amount of growth as a player that I got from that experience was, you know, Stevie Solace, you know, you know, I was just talking about it yesterday. We would get in, we'd be working and working and working, and he'd be nitpicking everything. And finally, I'd just, you know, kick him out or make him go to the store, and then I'd get the part and, you know, the next pass, it's done. And I'd always ask, you know, why are you riling me up? And he, that's good for you, David. You know, it's just like, well,
you say Supertramp.
Yeah. Yeah. Roger Hodgson. Yeah. It was a man.
I've been on a Supertramp kick, man. They're like unknown. Everyone knows their songs, but you don't know what they look like. Supertramp. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like I was like, wow, I had to go on YouTube just to see, like, what do these guys look like? They have funny, so much great music.
We were playing the Greek Theater on Halloween in San Francisco or in Berkeley. And our tour manager, Eric, you know, he was always giving me shit for listening to hippie music. and he told me that Roger Hodgson from Supertramp was going to be at the show. And I was like, wow, you know, this would be amazing. And after the show, I'm like, you know, talking to this guy and his son. And looking around, like while we're talking, I'm looking for this guy from Supertramp. I have no idea what he's going to look like, but I figure he's going to be, you know, glowing or something. I don't know. And then about 45 minutes Eric, and he says, oh, good. So you've met Roger. And I was like, holy shit. Oh, it's this guy. I don't know.
I love that. Glowing or something. I'm looking for a fucking lighter, man.
Listen, Shannon, don't pull a Richard Pryor on me, okay? I don't need that shit on my time.
Yeah, no.
Don't do it, dude. Don't. We love you, man.
Look, want to see my bed?
Yes.
Obviously.
Look above my bed.
We gotta get that.
This is my bed.
Oh my god.
And then you look up.
Oh. Oh. Venom!
Nice. Venom toaster. Isn't that metal?
That's mighty metal, man.
That's fucking metal, isn't it?
Oh man.
I find a lighter and smoke pot.
This is the most visual episode we've ever done. That's great.
Speaking of visuals, Shannon, can you describe to the world, like, are we at like Alex Gray Tool cover yet?
Let me see if I can show you a palm.
Gotta go, Shannon.
Start. You can see my face.
Show
Dave my pond.
Dave, he's on a mission to the pond.
No, he's not smoking.
Up on this bridge.
This is well done, sir.
Don't drop the computer.
Oh, it's
in the
too
water.
Damn dark.
You need to like underlight your entire pond, all 55,000 gallons, so that when we want to look at it at night, Shannon, we can fucking see it. Get with 30, it, bro. 000, yeah. That's not pimp, bro. That's not pimp. That's cool, but it's not pimp. I bet you Nuno Betancourt has a 60,000 gallon pond with all fucking LED lights under the whole thing.
This one is an albino red-eared slider. Ready?
Oh, that's nice.
And look at this little guy. Can you see?
Oh, yeah.
What are their names?
Well, that one's Johnny Winter. He's albino, you know. That's Bowie. And this guy here, look at this guy. He's standing up against the thing.
These are turtles for anyone that's listening. They're pretty amazing.
I fucking love this thing. Oh my God.
Shannon, are you glad you came on this show?
Yeah, dude, I'm having a great time.
Are we having a good time? Because I feel like, listen,
we're getting the full tour.
Dave again. This is just trips me out, man.
Like, are you sure that's the only thing tripping you out?
It's a positive fucking thing, man, right now happening. It's so rad. Yeah, I'm in my own world now.
Everyone notice he's wearing a 2020 shirt, which you can get at 202. Oh, by the way, Shannon, the shirt that you're wearing, the artwork was drawn by our drummer, Paul Lorenzo.
He's a man of metal.
So he's fucking a demon on the drums and he can draw.
Oh, dude, you should see the trippy ass shit he fucking draws. Hold on.
Here we go.
I have about 300 of these things around my house, man. But like,
he
look
is
at
super
that.
Talented. Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, that's an example of like one of the crazy things.
Saban has pretty eyes. That's what I'm seeing now.
You know what I mean? Like, he just draws these things and they're all on the back of bank statements. Yeah, it's a fucking, for people who can't see it, it's a record player with like crying, holding a guitar that's limp. And it's like a person. And it's such, like, if you ask Paul, just like his drumming, you ask him if it means anything, he goes, absolutely not. I didn't think of anything. There's no subtext. But anyone that's read Sigmund Freud or any psychology whatsoever knows there's a lot of shit going on in this motherfucker's head. His subconscious is a scary place to be, man. I don't know if I want to be tripping up there.
So we got turtles, we got dogs. I think that David rescued a dog. We've covered so much.
How did David rescue the dog? I feel like we saw this beautiful, majestic animal.
Oh, that might have been before we
started.
So
ladies and gentlemen, David Abruzzese, while we were talking beforehand, what Shannon signed on, then took the tea and he was gone, but then David signed on and then showed us this beautiful dog that he apparently just picked up because he saw it in the cage.
And now
he's gone.
Oh no,
he got 2020.
I think he was trying to turn the camera around and he shut it off. There he is. He's back.
David, what's up with the dog? Where did you get the dog?
I was on my way back from dropping someone off at the airport and I saw there was a cage on the sidewalk with a white dog.
Just like an abandoned cage?
No, there was someone there selling puppies.
Oh, okay.
And I pulled over and the black dog was going nuts and the white dog was really cool. So I snagged the white dog and drew eyebrows on it and brought it home.
You drew eyebrows on it?
You drew eyebrows on it, then brought it home.
You got to do that in this lifetime. If you haven't drawn eyebrows on a dog, you have not lived.
Wait, you need to do that with Pino. How mad would your mom be?
Never once had that thought in my life about drawing eyebrows on a dog. Where did that come from?
And then it disappears again. He's like, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, let me just drop this knowledge bomb on you. If you haven't drawn eyebrows on a dog,
is this like another mushroom thing, you know, where you have these revelations about things that you should be doing in your life? Like, would I have learned that if I did the mushrooms?
Depends on the friends you have.
I've been contemplating like different dimensional doors that you could travel through that would stop time here, but so time would keep moving with your consciousness as you travel out of your body through another dimensional door, right? But here time has stopped, so it's almost like time is relevant. And you know, but Dave and I are drummers, so we keep time anyway, so it doesn't matter. Time is irrelevant. We keep time.
So you're basically, your job is irrelevant.
We are time, though. So yeah, if it's time, guess what? Call Shannon and Dave, because it's time, motherfuckers.
I feel like Prince from the grave is like, no, I trademarked that. It's Morris Day and the Times. Back off, Larkin.
Well, wait, what are these other dimensions? I want to hear about it.
174.
What?
Seven.
One is 5 out of 4. The other one's 7 out of 4. 3, 4. 6, 8.
Got it.
I want no, Shannon. So I agree with you. I call it going to the netherworld because I feel like once I start seeing my ceiling kind of start to shimmer and I can see through the ceiling into something else is when I feel like, my mind starts going to places that it would not normally. So I understand what you're saying. Can you explain to people how you're feeling about that as far as like if you go to another dimension, it does make sense. Are you astrally projecting yourself to somewhere else? Like, do you believe that you're actually sending your consciousness to another place?
That is exactly it. And like, I haven't experienced it on DMT, but I'm told that there's a different dimension that multiple people that don't know each other, everybody sees the same things. And how could that be unless there was an actual place? That's obviously not a physical place. It's a place we have to go in our mind or from our mind. And so but in all seriousness, I do believe that, that there's dimensional doors that you can somehow pass through astrally. And well, so, and I do also believe that the Tree of Life is a map of the universe. And if you can astrally travel, then you can go to destinations that you choose.
Well, I mean, what's the fastest way to anywhere, Shannon? It's just by astrally projecting yourself there. And the thing is that I've noticed when I've been in those moments and I feel like I can see through my ceiling. One of the greatest fears is actually realizing that maybe you could be somewhere else and something else is seeing you and you're making an impression in another area that you've never been to using your mind. And people might think that this is a really abstract concept, but it's one of those things where I feel like a lot of the emotional purging and the dynamics of sometimes I feel sad or really happy are all meaningful when I'm going and looking into that other dimension. Can you speak to that as to how you're feeling?
I would feel foolish to try and put that into words because my addled brain is thinking wondrous thoughts.
But do you think you could play the song 15 BPM faster right now if you went into the studio?
What?
I said, do you think you could play the song 15 BPM faster right now if you had to go back to the studio and Sully called you?
No, he'd be like, start the song, and I'd be, what's the riff again?
I want to hear David's thoughts on
this. Yeah, Dan, what do you think about this real time? Because we told Shannon, like, hey, man, like, if you want, like, it was kind of a joke, like, the order of operations would be, like, sign on to the internet connection, then take shrooms. And he did it, actually. So I know that you've gone through the depths of your mind hallucinogenically. Can you speak to how you're your impressions of Shannon now? How is he feeling?
Well, no, the better question to David would be simply, do you believe in dimensional doors, having
I still have a little bit of fear that one day I'm going to open my eyes and I'm going to be 17 laying in a field covered in fire ant bites. And this is all going to be one big mushroom trip. And I'm going to have to try to make all the same decisions that I made.
Wow. In my life. That's scary, actually. Yeah.
But one thing different, change it all.
I do know that red ant bites suck.
That's not a world I want to go back to, David. Sounds like Inception. Did you die in this world and like time slowed down for you? Because that's another thing that people don't realize is that when you're on that stuff, like there is no time. So like it may be 2 hours. Like I actually sent a Cheap Trick record to David, and David, I was high as a kite packing it up. And let me tell you, it took maybe 2.5 hours, 3. I don't know for sure to pack that. And it still came smashed to you, which makes me question my entire existence. Is this a metaphor for something?
You just can't have never used too much, I guess. But it's no, that thing is hanging on my wall. I still, it's one of the best things ever. Thank you guys very much for that.
Of course, man. Very,
it was our pleasure, yeah, dude.
It's our pleasure for sure.
Shannon's like, fuck you. Wait, you got a Cheap Trick record and you just sent us these lousy Lost Symphony records. Yeah. But if you watch our interview with David, which you probably won't, but if you do, he says that one of his buddies comes into his studio and he had recorded his demo on like side B of Cheap Trick's first record. So he put it in he thought he was listening to Cheap Trick, which he thought was his friend. But no, it wasn't his friend. So we decided, hey, why not send him a signed Rick and Cheap Trick
record? If you
want
to hear the actual story, go listen to the episode because Ben just butchered the hell out of it.
It's terrible the way I said it. But I'm trying to convey it. I'm sorry for butchering it.
Tell these guys how amazing their demo is. And they're all looking at me like, you know, I have a hole in my head. That's tough. They're definitely on side B, side A.
He asked you an important question. I derailed you. What's your opinion on interdimensional portals? Because that's an important thing to get to.
Oh, come on, really?
Yeah, really.
I want to hear about it.
Try to keep me in this dimension.
Good answer. Yeah.
I noticed you got your interdimensional hat on too. I got tinfoil under mine. You got tinfoil under yours?
Oh, I still have hair, but I thank God. Yeah. Thank the
tinfoil
interdimensional gods. The fucking interdimensional guys look at me, keep my hair in my old age.
My Dave's like, I've been here a long, long time.
Balls are down to my knees. I still have my hair. He spit.
I did. I totally did. Dude, you made me literally spit out loud laughing. Holy shit, dude. You're out of control.
Have you been watching your balls race each other off the edge of a chair yet?
Yeah, as they're talking to each other.
I love being the only girl in the group.
You know what I like about you, Siobhan, is you make me feel like the only girl in the world.
Oh, excuse me. So sorry about that.
It's totally fine.
My Zoom keeps freezing on Shannon just with these huge grins on his face.
It's not freezing. That's what he looks like.
The happy stoner smile. That's what I call
that's
it.
Real time.
Well, it's very important when you're tripping, ladies and gentlemen, to make sure you have a guy like Shannon. He's the gatekeeper for many because you have to have someone that when you look at them, they have that perma smile on their face because at times you don't know if your wall is going to attack you, that if the dust bunny in the corner is going to start eyeing you and decide it wants to come your way in a very vicious and aggressive way. So you got to look at a guy like Shannon and see that happy life has no matters, carpe diem, all is fine with that happy stoner big fucking tooth grin that he has all the time, because that guy keeps you while you're in the dimension. He's like the reason you can get back to the ship. You know what I mean? He's like,
to help you out, Benny, next time you're in that space, you just got to remember that that dust mite that's coming at you, he's just joking. He's playing him. That doesn't hurt you. He's just playing.
Oh, man. I'm so glad that you guys are my friends.
Can I just tell you that? Like, so much. Yeah, I'm learning so much. I'm like, this is a totally different world to me, and it's fascinating. I feel like I'm learning so much.
Not just one world. There's many.
What are you?
Just
many worlds.
What are you extrapolating on? Travel. Siobhan, what are you extrapolating from this yourself? Like, as a normal, cogent human being of very high intelligence.
I don't know. I don't know that I would consider myself normal now, though. Because, like, okay. This is so interesting. Like, I feel like there's a whole area of life that I haven't explored yet. Like passageways in the brain that can be opened by this, you know. And when I think about the things that you guys are saying, like, I think about when I sit down to play music or write music and, like, all the limitations I place on myself, you know, and the things that I limit myself with. And I think it's interesting that you can, like open up a part of your brain that allows you to be free.
I'll tell you what
and
it
that's
is.
That's what I'm taking from
There's
this.
A word in particular. It's called synesthesia. Do you know what it means?
Yeah, like the crossover of senses, right?
Yeah, so you smell a sound or hear a taste. That's kind of like the way you need to think about like how it opens up your mind. It creates like sparks synapses from sides of your mind that would never have talked to each other. And you literally, it's one of those things that if you do it, like, listen, I don't care. All you people will say like, hey, you're a hippie, you're this or that. Until you do it, it's literally like being a mental virgin as far as I'm concerned. It's like, and there's plenty of people I know who've taken like, yo, no, dude, never again. Never. That's a scary place. It's a roller coaster. I don't want to do that. I don't enjoy it. But they understand because there's an empathy and an understanding that goes along with losing your mind the first time. Because it's really crazy when everything that you've ever known to be true, from the shadows in the room to the way light works and hits things, just completely go out the door.
I call that going Donati. Back to Virgil Donati.
Callback.
It was a giant Virgil Donati, Australia, because he was in Australia when, you know, they came and watched him so at the Godsmack show. So it all comes back. Virgil Donati's from Australia.
Mike Borden.
Yeah, dude. And Australia is the most venomous place. So any place that has a duck-billed platypus that can kill you is fucking trippy as fuck anyway.
Duck-billed platypus? In
there. Dude, it's venomous. The female ones, not the male ones. Oh, no, it's the male ones, not the female ones are. Maybe it's the female. One of them is venomous.
Oh, come on. You can't talk facts like that without knowing the real deal.
No, okay.
He does that all the time. This is not surprising.
I knew the duck-billed platypuses were fucking venomous. I just didn't know that there was a certain male or female that was. And then I was in a guitar group the other day gushing about it, and I made some duck-billed platypus joke for the Australian. And he was like, did you know it was the female or male? Is it the female or male duck-billed platypus that's venomous? Thank you, Google.
That's a question I never thought I would hear in my life. That's so strange.
That's right up there with what I said about my balls.
It's the male that's venomous.
Okay.
The male's venomous.
Very venomous. He'll kill you, dude.
So he's no platypussy.
No. I love the content of this show.
Yeah, I was gonna say normally I think it would be scrambling to like get back on track, but I don't even think I want to at this point.
Yeah, well, it's all about the other dimensions. We're going to other dimensions, and our listeners just have to go there with us. And
What'd you say, David?
That I when you guys put out the little blurbs on the 2020 show, I want to see one that says platypussy.
Absolutely done.
Well, you have to obviously edit that in and then put the fucking clip. Thank you for setting it up, Dave.
What's that weird thing you're smoking? Some crack pipe?
No, dude. This is dabs, and this is like a ceramic thing. So I'm smoking weed, but like hardcore weed. So what crack cocaine is to cocaine?
What's the backside of the thing you're holding? Just a light?
It has like a little bit of water, and it's like just like a little bong.
Oh.
So instead of using like a giant crack torch on a fucking crack bong, I can take my crack little ceramic thing and dip it in and then like casually smoke my dabs as opposed to like puffing up my whole studio with giant
Awesome. I never saw that before.
It's called the Honey Badger. Honeybadger.com. Go to it. It's fucking awesome. Those guys are actually really nice.
Do they endorse us?
But they sent me an extra tip one time. So here's your tip, Honey Badger. And you could send me shit. I love you guys. I love your shit. In fact, anyone that smokes dabs, if you wonder what I'm using all the time and Shannon was wondering. This is a ceramic tipped. I'm sure you could probably use it for crack if that's your thing. And it comes with you have to buy these strange batteries. They're 6505s or something like that. Like a little bit after Van Halen. And you know, you can put this in the fucking dabs. Don't do it in anything that's gonna burn because you'll smoke that too. But like, you can get fucking high as fuck, like much more casually than if you're lighting a blunt, say around your vintage Gibsons. Which has never stopped me, but still. So you know, Honey Badger.
Totally thinking. I bet that's not true.
I don't dab. I smoke all kind of weed, but I don't dab.
Wow. I didn't know what a dab was until like two years ago.
If you're taking shrooms and you take a dab while you're tripping, it will fucking enhance. Like, they're best friends, bro. Like, it nothing you've ever experienced.
It makes me go to sleep. Is what it does.
No, it's different. This is different, dude. This is 90% active THC versus like 30%. So when you do it, it's like literally like, remember cocaine? If you take the cocaine and then you do the bump and it gets you right back to where you were like 6 hours ago, that's what this does. It just like hits it in. You're like, oh my God, Johnny Depp's floating around with purple
bats. This sounds like
again.
Something that the cops warned me about in elementary school. I think it was called a DARE program, like peer pressure. Yeah. I knew that would come in handy one day.
DARE. I only know DARE by Stan Bush from the Transformers soundtrack. Which he did with Vince DiCola, who did the soundtrack to Rocky III. And that's some fucking awesome music. And what people don't know is he also did the song The Touch, which Mark Wahlberg stole for Boogie Nights, never credited Stan Bush or Vince DiCola, but sang it in the movie as if it were his own. Much like he did Rockstar, which is really based on Judas Priest.
Transformers, more than meets the eye.
Which was also Lion, Doug Aldrich's first band. Transformers, more than meets the eye. Not James Lomenzo and Vito Bratta, but Doug Aldrich.
Shannon, we're from the same.
Robots in disguise or robots in disguise?
I think it's robots in these guys. It's kind of dark, dude.
It's my moon. You see my hat start rising up.
I know, we haven't lost it yet. I was waiting for that.
I've been managing it quite well. I can feel it when it pops past the eyebrows. I bring it back down.
Did you draw on those eyebrows?
I'm gonna look like Dave Bagoda when I'm fucking 80 years old. Shannon, when you were in elementary school, do you remember this stuff that they brought around? Because I think we're the same age. That they made us swish around in our mouth and spit out, and they called it swish.
God damn it, Dave. No, I don't remember. I wish I did.
I've been trying to figure that out because they did it, and they had us then write down if we got dizzy or this or that. And it was they said it was for our teeth. It's like a fluoride thing. I'm still trying to figure out, you know, what kind of poison it was.
Fuck.
It was awful.
You probably called James Sokolov, attorney at law. Probably had asbestos. It's made by Johnson and Johnson. Yo, bro, listen. I found out that like Johnson & Johnson like baby powder gives you cancer. There's like a fucking multi-gajillion-dollar fucking suit. So like,
it was
if
fluoride.
That gives you, yeah,
it was fluoride.
But I'm saying, but if it gives you cancer, you don't think that thing they put in your mouth in the 80s gave you cancer? Everything in the 80s gave you cancer. Every single thing in the 80s gave you cancer.
70s, bro.
Well, that's also probably why you're tripping as you started getting the cancer from the 70s.
I'm going to fucking astrally project. No, I'm going to physically walk my ass away from here for a moment.
Okay. you do that. Listen, Shannon, you do you.
But I want to say this. Dave.
Sir.
Can, you know, if Benny can give you my number, that'd be awesome.
I don't have your number. I've told you 16 times to send it to me through fucking message. You never do. Am I not that cool? You won't accept my friend request on Facebook. Mikey was like, why don't you send it to him on Facebook, the video? I'm like, because he won't accept my friend request or send me his number. So that's why.
Your veins are all sticking out in your neck and shit.
I'm upset about it. I thought we were cool.
We will make sure you guys get connected after the show. I promise.
I will, sir. I will help for sure.
No, we'll make it happen, dude.
Really nice to talk. Thanks for sharing your tools. Enjoy your walk.
Can you show everybody your shirt, please, Shannon?
Okay.
Before you leave,
I'll sign off with this and I will talk to you all soon.
The apocalypse is going to be out, but ladies and gentlemen, he's wearing a 2020 shirt.
Woo, rocking it.
As modeled by
Shannon
Larkin of Godsmack and the Apocalypse Blues Revival. It's done by Paul Lorenzo, our drummer from Lost Symphony. You can get it at 2020-D.com. It will weird Corey Pesa out if you wear them in public around him. And in fact, I recommend everybody doing a flash mob with that shirt around Corey somewhere.
Bye, Shannon. He's gone.
He's gone.
He's off in another dimension somewhere.
He was hanging on by a thread.
He's projected
bro.
To another dimension. Yeah.
I love that guy.
Dude, I didn't really think he was. Maybe part of me thought he would do that, but he really did that.
Yeah, he
did. You enabled him, so there. That was the invitation.
That's the interview that people really need to see with Shannon Larkin.
That had artwork to his shirt. Just
well, David, we do have a few minutes left. Can you just tell us maybe what you're up to, man? Like, how are things going with you? It's been a little while. We haven't had a chance to catch up.
There's a lot of angry people that want to hear answers to questions that think we, well, me in particular, talked over you. So can you answer those Pearl Jam questions? We need to know, because people are so angry online because they don't understand our rapport. Like, our dynamic is me to yell over you, and then you send me awesome beats that are just completely random.
And then you just yelled over the question that he was going to answer, too.
Right. That's our dynamic.
The enabler. What was the question?
That's it. I don't know.
I've been in the studio mixing a lot. I've been sending you guys some tracks here and there.
They sound great, man.
Oh, good. I love that
there's a funky one you sent that's got such a cool groove.
Am I playing keyboards on any of this shit, bro? Because I want to.
Oh, I've got some original stuff coming up. Yeah, my kit's getting set up on the 10th, and then we're going to switch gears. But I've got two more songs to mix for Stevie. I've been after Stevie for years to dig up his old stuff and let me have a go at it, because I just, you know, it was kind of a lost in translation. We did a record together, and I had told him, you know, your voice, you've got a great voice, you know, you don't have to affect it up so much, blah, blah, blah. And he misinterpreted that as the whole record. So the record's really dry. I've always been bothered that so many, the Vitalogy record, the cassette that I have of the rough mixes eclipses the final record and the mastering. You know, it's like, it's so rich and so dynamic. And then in the mastering, it just got squashed too much, in my opinion. But so he stepped it up, and he's putting out not necessarily the greatest hits. If anything, I guess like a greatest misses, the ones that kind of fell through the cracks. And so I'm remixing a lot of those. I'm really having a good time revisiting, first of all, analog tape sound. And
do you have analog tape at your place?
No, these things were tracked on analog. It's nice to get a record that's just 23 tracks and a Sinti stripe,
to work on a record with only 23 tracks. That would be amazing.
But they could be submixes, Corey. They could be submixes already that are all fucked up that you have to EQ all kinds of weird shit out of.
That's okay.
Parts where there's no vocals, you know, because you only had that one little space to work with and things like that. But it's been a lot of fun, like mixing again. And there's I'm using these cables that a good friend of mine started this company with this cabling. And man, I've got to hook you guys up with them. Yeah, but sure. I know as soon as you get them, you're not going to be able to use anything but them.
Shout them out. Who is it? What's the company?
I've been doing and everything are just drums to mics to hard disk. There's nothing in between. And it's because of these cables. Like if I want a different sound of my snare, I switch cables. They're that effective. Mm-hmm.
What's the name of the company?
V2.
What was it?
V2.
V2?
I think I have some. Hold on.
I'll take cables.
I should plug in my head now. I'll plug in some other time. But it's incredible. It's changed everything. And like these mixes that, it's amazing. But I've been really enjoying being on that side of the console again. But then on the 12th, I'm going to start beating the shit out of my drums again. So
nice.
Very exciting.
Well, you had said something to me about a piano song, and I want you to know that if you send me any piano song, I will be more than happy to obsess over it, as you know I shall, and play on it for you.
I already sent it to you once, but it fell through the cracks, and I will send it again.
Yeah, we both know the apocalypse, and I use that as definitely a double entendre for our friend Shannon Larkin that has now left us to go officially into the other world. Between us is definitely, we have a lot of energy, David, but it's so crazy that we're a bunch of crazy atoms just smashing off things. And sometimes things stick and sometimes we just bounce in different directions.
Yeah. Sometimes those emails and messages fall through the cracks. It's like whenever I get excited about something and I send, 20 messages of a song to 20 different friends, then all of those messages sort of disappear that were beneath them,
Right.
I don't really have the time to scroll all the way down. Every once in a while, I'll go back, I'll hit my email thing and I'll go back. I think the last time I did it, I was going back as far as 2003, and I'll just answer random emails that someone sent me.
So Pearl Jam fan 96, yeah. Like got back, like you've explained what the meaning of corduroy
like
really
6
was.
Years later, 10 years later. Wow.
What are you up to now? It's just, and I never apologize for the time difference. I just answer.
Yeah.
Just do it. Yeah.
If anyone sent you their number, you should just call them and still see if it's them.
Do that. Yeah, I do that too.
It's amazing.
Tell them you just got 2020.
I have learned that it's a pain in the ass. Like when I sit and do, peck out an answer in an email that's all thoughtful and then I edit it, you got to write a fucking novel somehow. All of a sudden, you got to know how to be a writer to get your point across. And then I hit send, and then all of a sudden, boom, the email demon or whatever the thing it says that their email address doesn't exist anymore.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Or you buy your computer stalls and then it somehow eats your fucking super long email that you haven't saved. And then you have to write the whole thing all over. And you're like, dude, I can't handle this right now.
1% left, 1%.
Yeah, I can't handle it. Kind of like Shannon's eyes were telling me, like he couldn't handle it at the end. He was just like, this is really, I gotta go.
Yeah, I figured when you started talking about the evil dust mites that you might be going down a road that's going to make it disappear.
Yeah, Ben's not very helpful in that situation.
First off,
I heard the really small Shannon Larkin voice say, evil dust mites?
Did he really say that?
Yeah, dude.
Oh, man. I'm terrible.
You broke rule one with that
first
situation.
No, rule one is you never have any communication through the internet or phone. I would never agree to doing an interview. Like, he is such a brave soul to fucking take it at the beginning and fucking be cheersing us as he's like, oh, yeah, here's a quarter of this and a quarter of that. Like, dude, that's way too much. That is entirely too much, especially to take in tea, which is a very visceral experience nonetheless.
Could you imagine the feeling when he turned his phone off?
All of a sudden,
yeah.
He's like back in his safe room.
Yep. Did that really happen? Did I just talk to the guy from ministry?
That was by far the most visual and
that was a fun episode.
The strangest journey that any of our episodes have taken.
So back to my first question, Dave, what's up with the number one Pearl Jam record since we last talked to you? Like, what do you think about that? And do you get paid for that shit or do they just screw you?
Well, we were playing, songs off the 10 record, which back in the day, before the split happened, I told them I didn't feel right to take, because, I accepted money from the publishing of that because I was promoting it. But after, leaving the band, I just kind of said, I gave him money back. It was no more of that, but yeah, I got a lot of emails and it's, it's got a lot of people going to YouTube and talking about how much they loved the band back then and all that stuff. It was a different band, but yeah, I really, it probably, got, The I haven't really looked, but imagine the videos on YouTube that of things I've done and all that have a few more hits than they did before.
I would say so. Yeah. I would say having a number one record during COVID.
Yeah, and people love you, man. On our previous podcasts, even like you get the most discussions going, in the comments and people talking about
a lot of very, opinions.
Very very passionate, specifically about your contributions to the those records.
I love that. I love that. It's like I always see the ones that always catch my eye are the ones, you know, when people talk about, you know, like I just communicated with this guy yesterday who, you know, reached out and talked about when he was 12 years old, he went to a show in like Spokane, Washington or Bozeman, Montana or something, some small thing. And I'd met him outside and I gave him and his friend some tickets and they came to the show and they didn't have any money or any friends. So they sold one of the tickets and some guy offered him $50. So not only did he get to go to the show and meet the band, but he made $50. And, you know, nice. And now he's a drummer and all this stuff. And so I saw that on a YouTube post. And so I found him on Facebook and I just wanted to reach out and, you know, see how he was doing, making it through this COVID stuff. And he grew up, you know, he got hit by a car and been through all this stuff. It's just amazing. You know, it's like, so I have a lot of relationships online with people that, you know, I think that's why the positive thing that I get from the online stuff is just that, getting to reconnect and revisit these memories that, you know, would otherwise just kind of get washed away. You know? It's cool. Love that stuff.
Do you think Sharon Osbourne has you playing with Black Sabbath that just sits on it because she's, you know, deciding to hold out?
Man, I was with Tommy Lee and he was doing the Methods of Mayhem thing. And it was at Ozfest and I think Brian Tichy was playing drums for Ozzy and it was like, it amazed me, you know, cause basically, essentially it was like, you know, he's in Ozzy's band, but he's never really met Ozzy. Like once I said to him, like, good show, you know, as they were wheeling him off and said, good show. And that was it.
That's wild.
I got to tell you, actually, my mom told me after I went to an Ozfest one year and I met everybody. And I came back out and my mom thought I was depressed because I was so excited to meet Ozzy. And when I came back, she's like, so did you meet Ozzy? I was like, yeah. She's like, you don't seem very excited. And I'm like, well, whatever. And it was because when I met Ozzy, I waited for 2 days backstage and I talked to every single band, like Static X, Slayer, everyone. Some of them, most of them were like, we haven't even seen Ozzy. Like we haven't even seen Ozzy. So one day in a full red jump, like jumpsuit, like workout, like onesie, Ozzy like walks out and like he's covered in sweat and I'm like, holy shit. And I ran like right over to him with like five other people that had been waiting like fucking vampires. And he didn't even look at me. He like mumbled, he signed a bunch of stuff. And I just remember thinking to myself, is this what I looked through for the import bin to find like the concert, like for this guy? And like, it was depressing for me.
Well, you know, sometimes it's tough when you meet your heroes, isn't it?
not when they're like you, David. You're my favorite hero ever.
True.
Shannon's a close second, though.
Yeah.
he's moving up very quickly. I got to tell you, when we talked to him the first time, the whole time I'm like, man, David would love this guy.
That was great to get you guys together. It was so fun.
You know, 2020, bringing folks together.
We do our best.
Like you're on a tour bus with your backdrop there, lady. Old bus blinds, you know?
I know.
We got to get you like a green screen so you can. We can
I know.
Put you in us.
This is my other spot. So it's like it's just a studio apartment. So it's like all open. So it's like kitchen and shit and all sorts of stuff in the back. So I'm like, you know what? Whatever. I'll just throw up the blinders. It is like a bus screen. It's so bad.
That's my place. I live in a 6x6 cinder block room. That's it. There's no furniture, just a chair and the light you guys sent me and that album you sent me. The rest of it's all green screen.
Nice. The big sound stage with all the, you know, the duck,
funny part,
the duck pond. And
is he's on the dark side of Shannon's room right now.
Yeah.
Behind the curtain of all, like all the crazy trippy curtains and the tapestries he has all over the place.
Did you hear about this lady in New York who was remodeling and she knocked out the wall? She was doing something in her bathroom and found out that on the other side of her bathroom.
I saw
mirror,
that. There's a whole other apartment on the other side of her bathroom mirror that was like all like abandoned and weird.
That's creepy.
Wow, that's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's terrifying.
Was it like, work? It's like a lazy boy there, you know, facing the mirror, but
yeah.
Creepy.
That would be bad.
So that everyone knows. So you said you don't give a fuck about, like, you know, the Pearl Jam 10 stuff, but you did play on, you know, a number one record literally just like mere weeks ago. Does anyone call you? Does anyone fire off an email and say, like, yo, man, like, good times?
No. Nope. No, I wish they would, though. Stone cold. No, I actually did play on another number one record this last year. The Anaba Salas record that I'm mixing for, too. I might have sent you that track as well. That came out number one as well in Japan.
Marty Friedman knows about it. Congratulations,
my friend. I remember you sending the track. I didn't realize that it was number one, though.
In Japan?
Yeah. Yeah, don't make fun of that.
Where all the smart people are.
Big in Japan.
No! Japan? Are you kidding me? They're like light years beyond us. Any culture that thinks Marty Friedman's Mr. Guitar is like diametrically aligned with my vision of life.
There you go.
The only thing that I've learned about Japan, and this is through Marty Friedman, is that they don't get breakfast foods. They don't understand hot Cheetos. They don't get Lucky Charms, anything with marshmallows.
Well, anything that's highly processed.
They are vastly superior to us in every single way, shape, or form. They're humble, smart, like diverse, cultured people that don't believe in hubris, and but they don't understand marshmallows.
I think that runs through most Asian cultures, actually, not to stereotype anyone, but
yeah. Fuck marshmallows, Asia. You got 2020.
Yeah, I don't even know where to take that.
Me neither. I don't know. My brain is shutting off.
How many glasses of wine are you in, Siobhan? How's your week been?
Not that many glasses of wine. It's just been a super long day. So my brain is like...
What's a long day like for you, Siobhan?
So I was up at like before 8 a.m. I had 4 hours of recording and video with this like soul R&B artist with a... It's like a contemporary chamber orchestra in Miami.
Wow.
And then... I had another rehearsal with this girl who's like a pop opera crossover singer that orchestrates stuff. She's doing like a big concert on Tuesday, and I'm like her music director for that. And then, and then I came back here and was just catching up on my class. And yeah, it's been a long weekend, so my brain is in like five different places.
Did you get me the signed Star Set record I asked for?
I'm working on it. We have to dig into the... into the merch archives and get everyone to sign it. Everyone's all over the place.
No, I'm just messing with you.
No, I'm going to get it to you.
I don't think people understand how much Siobhan works and even more importantly, how much Corey works.
Not as much as Siobhan.
No. Corey, I'm just running around.
You just don't get paid as much to work as she does. That's very different.
I have singular... things that I work on. Your eclectic
that's true. Yeah,
choice of gigs makes me tired.
I'm going to put it out there too. You guys did a great interview with Shawnee Kimmelman. I thought she handled it very well. I mean, you know, as she says, she's not incredibly experienced with the dynamic of interviews, and she handled you very well, Benny.
Yeah, she was very calm. She was very calm.
Shawnee and I have had a lot of back and forth because she actually inboxed me, much like you. And she actually said because of you, because you had sent her a track, and she said that and it was like very, very flattering. She said that not surprisingly, a bunch of men have inboxed her. Because if anyone's seen Shawnee Kimmelman, who we just did a Slay at Home performance with some Skid Row, yeah. She's a fantastic, like really yeah,
check
fantastic
that out. And her episode is number 43 for anyone that's listening or watching.
Oh, Cirque de Soleil, Michael Jackson. But I met her because she inboxed me and said that David had sent her the track "The Garden of Earthly Delights," which is on Chapter 2 of Lost Symphony, LostSymphony.com, and that some guys had hit her up about a similar project, doing something orchestral, whatever. And she was just like, "Nah." This guy, after I've heard what David sent me, there's no point in like lowering myself down to this level. And I thought that was just like what a compliment, especially when you see someone who's as talented. I mean, she's from Israel. She like literally said, I want to come to the United States and play guitar. Like went out to, you know, to California.
Got guts. Yeah, she's
and
that,
she
she's
just
awesome.
Fucking did it, dude. And now she's like getting like, I mean, obviously not because of COVID, but was getting pyro training and makeup training and fucking playing Michael Jackson every single night, two shows. And she's the real deal, dude. And it's because David sent her a track. And then she's like, I want to work with you. So we did the Slay at Home performance. And I mean, I hope we do plenty of other stuff with her because she's awesome. So thank you for that, David.
And yeah, awesome. That's what we do.
Yeah.
And she played with David Ellison from Megadeth, who was also on the show and also on Lost Symphony. So, you know, it all comes back around. So when I found out about her, when I went to go look her up, I was like, wait a minute. She's playing with Ellison and Bumblefoot and Andy, who's a great guitar player who plays in David's band. You know, like it's fucking ridiculous. So you're starting to see these people. And the reason these people exist the way that they do is because the tenacity. Someone like Shani, yeah. Like, you know, Israelis just by definition have tenacity. Okay. But she, you know, came over here and she's like, I'm going to play guitar. And she's talking to the guy from Pearl Jam. She's, you know, playing with us because she was like, I know that David dude. And she used you as social proof. And you want to know what? The girl wails and she's great. Yeah, and yeah. I appreciate it.
It's funny. The show, I was watching the show with her. While I was, you know, working and just watching bits and pieces as I had time. And, a partner of mine in the studio, he says, hey, I know that girl. And it comes to, I come to find out that he had met her in, they had like a, they shared 5 minutes, you know, having a cigarette at some mastering engineer's house that he was showing the cables to.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, the world's a funny place. It's gotten so small. It's really a trip.
Well, like, it's great that you could have the interconnectedness, you know, like Shannon was saying about the other dimensions. It is kind of like crazy because I remember when you could go to Barnes & Noble and get books like with famous people's addresses in them. And you'd be like, oh, you could send Brian May from Queen at this known address. Tony Iommi from Black Sabbath is this P.O. box number. And this guy is, you know, at AOL. Is like B.B. King actually on his backstage passes put his AOL address. Is actual. So you could go and sign on at one point and you could watch to see when BB King signed on. So, awesome. you know, I think it's great.
It's funny during this time where everyone's kind of locked down and it's like a lot of people have gotten to reach out to each other through social media. And like, I ran across the great Tony Franklin, bass player.
Oh, yeah. For the Firm, Blue Monday.
I shot him an email or I shot him a message and just said, yeah, let's do something. And he shot back and said, what you got cooking? And I was like, holy shit. You know, I get all fanned out, you know, it's like, oh man. Cause I saw him with the Firm and he blew my mind, but it's just, it's so cool. Cause now you can.
Hold on. Can we explain to everybody who's not like learned how important the Firm is, David? Cause who's in the Firm? Can you tell the plebeians?
Played on drums, Paul Rogers on vocals and Tony Franklin on bass.
You got unbelievable. It. And who else did Tony Franklin play with?
Kajagoogoo, didn't he?
One Jimmy Page.
Yeah, that's what I said. Jimmy Page with the Firm.
Oh, you broke up, bro. You broke up. You got 2020 by your internet connection. I'm like, dude, you didn't mention Jimmy Page. That was the guy I was looking for.
No big deal. That's yeah.
Is that interdimensional thing happening again? Page has got us on lockdown.
Well, he's working with Coverdale again, apparently. I don't know if that's a good or bad. Is that a good or a bad thing, David?
Depends on who the drummer and bass player are. Ba-da-bah!
Who should be the drummer and bass player with the Coverdale Page project? Living, obviously.
Well, me on drum.
If it can't be you.
Oh, okay. Then Shannon.
There we go.
That would be fucking rad, yeah. Dude. Okay, and bass?
Oh, bass, Carmine Rojas, or who else would be out there? Oh, man, there's so many monsters out there these days. So many. This is just so many.
I'm going to vote Billy Sheehan.
Nah, I'm a little Sheehan myself.
Okay, Jaco Pastorius, this zombie apocalypse, yeah. If you want some more fretless. By the way, have you heard him play, I think it's called like Boy Alien. It's with oh my god, is it Ian Hunter? But he does the craziest fucking shit, dude. I was just listening to Jocko this week, and I just refreshed myself. It's like Boy Alien or something like that, and it's the craziest bass fucking you've ever heard, Dave. Like you have to go. I'm gonna look it up right now.
You know Percy Jones? You need to check out a band called Brand X with Phil Collins on drums, on bass. Unbelievable.
Oh, it's Ian Hunter, Jocko Pistorius, All-American Alien Boy.
Wow.
Dude, you're going to have your mind blown.
You're Ian Hunter.
Yep. Ian Hunter, Jocko Pistorius, All-American Alien Boy. And it's the most insane groove. Like it's wow. Honestly, the funny part is I loved the Weather Report. I listened to the Jocko albums, and I think that this may have taken the cake for my favorite Jocko stuff. And I just heard it last week, so it was like rediscovering a friend. It was like finding the Freddie Mercury song I hadn't heard.
That's cool.
Kind of like doing Gates to Babylon with you. So people know, David, we talked about Cozy Powell earlier. We decided on lockdown that we'd get our friend Joey Concepcion, who's a guitar savant, as far as I'm concerned, to do my favorite Blackmore, which is Rainbow era Blackmore. And of course, Ronnie James Dio, as Mikey Doling, who came on the show, posted on Facebook today, was the GOAT in metal. I don't disagree. I could obviously see some contenders in like the Bruce Dickinsons and all that, but I think Ronnie James Dio. So I got to tell you, doing Gates to Babylon and then hearing your track, because you played to the actual Rainbow song, which kind of breathes in and out of 130 BPM. And if you listen to You Against Cozy, it's kind of like if you put on a Sonic Maximizer and then a Tube Screamer on Cozy Powell. It's kind of what you did. And when Corey first said it to me, he was like, well, it's not totally in time. And that's true.
No, I didn't grit it.
No, right, yeah. Right. By not totally in time, I mean literally quarantined.
You make it sound like an insult.
A little bit.
No. But if you go and listen to it against Cozy Powell, it's like you literally are an Ouija board. Like they say this about Joey Concepcion too. Like an Ouija board to the disembodied spirit of Cozy with a lot of fucking Adderall.
It was funny because I was playing to that. And they threw the a video camera up, and I wasn't really aware of it. And then when I watch back, it's always the same thing. I always think I'm playing controlled and you know, not really hitting hard and all this. And then I watch back, and it's just like I'm wobbling again.
Yeah.
You posted that video, and you have all these amazing drum greats. You know, I love a guy like John Tempesta for playing in The Cult and White Zombie. Like, oh, man, that's so awesome. And I'm just sitting there like a proud mother being like, my kid scored a goal in soccer. You know, because if anyone watches this video, like Dave literally looks, it looks like Neil Peart, dude. You just have like this very majestic, like you do look very controlled and very thought out. Like where normally I would think maybe you're more frenetic. No, dude, you are controlled. And the way that you play is something that it's an aggression where you can, it's like the same thing. It's like when you punch from here to here in like judo and it's more powerful than punching from here. That's the way you play drums. And that's the way you play Cozy. And it's a pleasure to watch you because you do it with such reckless abandon.
It's a great track. I was really, really excited when you brought it up. And as I've gotten the versions with little bits and pieces of new people added onto it, it's just, I get more and more excited. And the last one,
Mike Mangan, he plays with Glenn Hughes. He does the whole Deep Purple thing, plays with a real Leslie through a real B3 and has a bunch of boxes and all that. And he is just such an insane player. And he sent us video of him actually playing, and he's just a great showman. He did he's the only guy I've seen do like an 8-minute like keyboard organ solo and not be bored and have to go like smoke a joint or get a beer. And he's that great. And he got to play on it, and he played the organs I always thought that song needed to make it sound more like Purple.
It was amazing. Yeah, it's an amazing track. Now, I've got 2% left on my phone that we're talking
about. All right, man.
David, no, we'll let you go, yeah. Will you come back again?
I have a Glenn Hughes story because he talked to me at one point. We were in discussion about me doing this 3-piece bombastic band with him. So we'll talk about that next time we talk, yeah.
Well, oh, yeah, I know that everyone on the internet wants to hear so much more. So guys, right below, subscribe to 2020-D.com and ask us questions. I know you're annoyed at me. I know you want us to talk about other things than Shannon's trip, but this is our fucking fun, dude. So fuck all of you. You don't have to listen to us. You don't. Dave's here because he wants to
be. But we'd really
appreciate
if you did.
But stick around, please.
David, we love you, man.
Thank you so much. It was so fun to see you.
Dave, I love you, man. You really are. David Abruzzese is the true blue. You are music, man.
You are. You're such a good friend, too.
And being able to, I love that Shannon asked me to give him his number when Shannon hasn't even given me his number himself. What a dick.
All right, man. You guys have been 2020'd. We'll see you next time. Thank you, as always, for checking out this episode of 2020. Please go to 2020-D.com, like and subscribe to the podcast so you don't miss out on future episodes. This week's throwback clip is also from David Abruzzese on episode 20. Check it out.
And the first time I talked into a microphone was accepting the 1993 Band of the Year and Album of the Year AMAs.
Wow.
By myself, uncoached by my so-called integral manager, by the way. Just left me hanging. It was horrible, but fantastic. Awesome.
Were you tripping?
No, I was stoned out of my mind.
Hey, what's up? This is Blake Weiland. I'm the host of the Tone Mob Podcast. It's a show where I interview guitar people about guitar stuff. We talk about their pedals, their amps, their accessories, their preferences, all that stuff, as well as a healthy dose of whatever comes up. Topics have ranged from aliens to addiction and anywhere in between. Oh yeah, and pizza. We're definitely going to be talking about pizza. So get the show wherever you're listening to this podcast at. Just search The Tone Mob in your search bar and it will pop right up. Come join us. We're having a lot of fun. Thanks for checking it out.